Accession number 30034, Reel 7.
With any of the senior officers in 8th Fighter Command?
Only when they came down to our place, General Kepner, and...
Just Jesse Horton?
Oh yes, this Help little him. Interview would not be complete without Jesse Horton. Warren Eugene Kerr, my wingman, we were coming home, and as we usually do, we were down on the water, just skimming along, minding our own business, and I saw these two thunderbolts pulling up and firing, coming down, and I could see that for quite a ways, and out in the middle of the North Sea, this is unusual, and I thought, oh boy, you know, they really must have something, and as I got closer, I could see it was a boat. And so, you know, we armed the guns and closed the canopy and put the cigarettes out and all that and climbed up maybe, well, I'll just take a guess, 5,000 or 6,000 feet, not very high. But I could see this boat and it was burning.
Captains and majors, or major squadron commanders, were authorized a vehicle and a driver. And Curtis Houston, who comes from down around South Carolina, was Phil Tukey's driver. Sergeant Houston got into a brawl one night, and he used to wear a belt buckle, which was a big GI belt buckle. And the GIs at that time were very handy. The old heads who came up the hard way, they would wrap this belt around there and had this big belt buckle. And he just beat the living bejesus out of somebody with that. Eventually, the big belt buckles went away. But I remember Sergeant Houston for that because he was very good at it.
You betcha. You got it.
Especially.
And I told Gene to stay right behind the wingman. He makes a move to turn. I said, just jump. I said, right, shoot him down. Because I still didn't know who they were. And so we followed them, and I stayed maybe 200 or 300 yards behind him. And they came to Marlesham Heath and pitched out, landed, and I still didn't trust them. I landed right behind mine, and Gene landed right behind his. I taxied with him. And when he pulled into a revetment, I pulled across the revetment so you could not get out. And Gene did the same thing. Passing car, I said, take me to commanding officer, to Colonel Tukey. I knew it was Tukey's outfit. So I went in and talked to Phil. And I said, Phil, two of your troops just shot up an air sea rescue boat. And he said, oh, he says, you know, you can't be right. And, well, his first thing, he says, are you still alive? That always stuck me. Hello, Bunny, are you still alive? Yeah, I told him, I said, two of your troops just shot up an RAF rescue boat. No, that's not possible. I don't think we got very much further in the conversation from that than the RAF call. And I could hear this, I'm sorry. The RAF said that they had dispatched a walrus out, and sure enough, these two knotheads had just utterly destroyed that boat. They killed the boat crew, they killed a B-17 crew, the gunner who tracked them, I'm sorry he didn't kill him, fine man, whoever he is, he will get his reward in heaven, I hope, but he tracked them the whole time. Never fired, and they shot his legs off. Both legs, shot him off.
Do you know who these characters were?
One of them was Green. Got a name? Do you have a list of people in the 357?
Yes. Yes.
356?
Yes, I think so.
Look up Green from Connecticut. Yeah. And they call this jerk in, and He said that was a German torpedo boat. I said, why hell it was. It was an RAF rescue boat. He said, look, he says, I used to build torpedo boats in Connecticut. He said, I know a torpedo boat when I see it. You smart ass son of a bitch. And then Phil came in and said, no, it's an RAF boat, you shut up. And then the kid shut up. Gene and I got in our airplane, went home, and I talked to somebody. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to prefer court-martial charges against him, because I knew Phil didn't have guts enough to do that. And but anyway, a call from 65th Wing headquarters, and we were at Halesville at that time. And I had to go by and pick these two people up in my staff car. And we went by and picked them up. And this guy said, well, you know, an honest mistake. And I couldn't talk to him. Mm-hmm. And Gene didn't either. And we got over to General Auten's office and saluted smartly, all four of us. And General Auten knew that I had, apparently had heard that I wanted a court-martial. And he explained to me that things like that happen in a war, that it's a mistake, and that I should, you know, let bygones be bygones. That's all right, except that they sent both of us home, and that was before we had any tours. That did not set too well on my stomach for a while. And
this was Auten.
I just thought it was, this is Auten. Auten. And I remember I remarked to General Auten, I mean, sir, that I really think we ought to be court-martialed. He said, well, we're not going to do that. So that was the end of it.
Hub couldn't stand him.
Huh?
Hub couldn't stand Auten.
Oh, an out-and-out incompetent. An incompetent. And I know when I was a squadron commander, later at Boxton, Auten had a certificate made up, and you had to sign this thing and said, I hereby certify, or something like that, that I will, one, see the enemy first, two, engage the enemy, three, something else, four, something else. I believe there were six of them in there. And we all got one of these things. And I went to Dave, I said, hey, Colonel, if I sign that thing and I get shot down, I can be court-martialed, technically, because I did not do what I said I was going to do. And Dave poo-pooed it. He said, you know, sign the damn thing. And I said, no, I'm not going to sign it. I won't. And I didn't. And Dave, you know, just shook his head. And Hal Comstock's a hopeless case.
Did you see much of Auten?
No, that was the... he came over to the base a few times to award medals and, you know, outside of shaking his hand, that sort of thing. He hung out mostly with the fourth group.
Yeah.
He was quite fond of them.
Well, they were on his doorstep.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. I know I was at the fourth group, as I told you, when Gentile went in. But I was also at the fourth group one night. And why I was there, I have no foggy idea, but... Don Blakesley was skunk-ass drunk, and he was laying on the floor of the club and was bemoaning the fact that he had promised his mother that he would not go to war. And he was crying and that he had broken his promise to his mother and this sort of thing. I thought it was a little humorous, but maybe it wasn't. He proceeded to hit the general's, I believe the general's wife, with a beer bottle.
God.
And for that he was broken from colonel to lieutenant colonel.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that would be the end of him. But 4 or 5 years later, he got promoted to colonel again. And I never saw him until he was at Clovis, New Mexico. And I went in there with a bunch of F-84Fs. And an F was a sort of a difficult airplane.
It was a swept wing one, wasn't it?
Yeah, swept wing. And we were using their gunnery range. And he called me into his office. He was the group commander.
Mm.
And how do you like it? I said, I wasn't too crazy about it. And because they had, because of the altitude at Clovis, they had talked TAC into having the F-100s and let Alex get the F-84s when we were originally scheduled for the F-100s.
Mm-hmm.
Those didn't sit well with us. But in any event, he asked me what my in-commission rate was, and I said it's running about 96 to 98%.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's impossible. And I said, that's not concern. He said, you can get down the flight line, pick any airplane you want, bring your parachute.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you wouldn't lie to me, could you? I said, you bet I would. And the boy, the fire was going between the two of us. And that's what it was. I had a very good crew, and they worked on them at night.
Mm-hmm.
And during the day, you pick your airplane, you go fly. So that was the last time I ever saw that place.
Well,
I understood later on that he made some remark to one of his staff people that I was lying, and that I was a lying SOB.
He was a funny fellow. Yeah. I say he is a funny fellow. Did you distinction that
Sailor Milan?
RAF type?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the same. I used to swim with them.
Did you?
When we were in Biggin Hill. Nobody else would go swimming. I did.
What were you doing in Biggin Hill?
They sent the 63rd down there for some reason.
Oh, in the early days.
Yeah, oh, very early. And nobody was, I noticed this one fellow swimming all the time. Sort of a rotund, not fat, but mm-hmm. pretty heavy. And so I used to go swimming with him. And then I found out his name was Milan.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I'm sorry to admit this, I didn't mean a thing to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, of course, I found out who Sailor Milan was. There were a group of Frenchmen down there. Sorry, I don't remember the Frenchman's name. I sort of took up with him a little bit. But they didn't leave us there very long because the 14,000-pound monster was leaving big ditches out in their nice little airfield. And if it rained, why, the thunderbolt stayed on the ground. They couldn't afford to have it there. Well, we only stayed there for maybe 2 weeks. That was all.
Did you ever take a P-47 on or off one of these advanced landing ground strips with a PSP? You'd remember, I think, the rattle.
Yeah, the rattle of the thing. Well, I took that B-26 off of one.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if you ever had
I don't recall ever doing it.
Yeah. The two-seat jug. You remember that?
Mm-hmm, very well.
The double bolt.
63rd had it.
That's right. Did you have, what was it like, your opinions of that?
Flew just the same as a regular jug.
Mm-hmm.
Was no problem. We had a doctor.
Horning?
Huh?
Horning?
No.
That was the...
Oh, wait a minute.
That was
You're
the
close.
61st one was Horning. Doc Horning?
Hornig. Yeah. Very nice man. Died of cancer not too many years after that. But Doc Horning wanted a ride. Everybody was... We were taking the enlisted troops up and anybody who wanted to ride.
Mm.
And Horning got in the damn thing and I don't know who flew it, but he puked all over the floor. And all over himself, too, for that matter. But he came down and he told the crew chief to clean it up. And the crew chief went to Carnahan, and Carnahan went to me, and that ain't going to happen that way. So I called up Hornig, and I said, hey, you are the one who puked the airplane, not the crew chief. And he said, well, that's their job. I said, if you want, I will go to pay a shilling. That is your job. But he came out and he cleaned it up. He was a nice man. He was dying of cancer. He had gotten married, and he was building this house. He'd had a very successful practice. And not too long after the war, I'll say 52, 54, something like that, is building this house for his wife, and he knew that he was dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a wheelchair by this time, and he oversaw the construction of this house that his wife is going to have. He died.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've got several pictures of him. Did he... Was the medic for the whole group or just for the squadron?
I think he belonged to the squadron.
Mm-hmm.
My medic first was Hanley Sayers, who just died here 2 or 3 months ago. And then he seemed to move up to the group. And then I got a captain by the name of William Woods, who was from Arkansas. He was a real character. His cigarette was always hanging out of Bill's mouth. Even at that point, I wondered why his lips didn't get cancer, because he would smoke them right up to the bitter, bitter end. And he used to go down and he would take care of the apartment. He'd go down and talk to the landlady down there, and something happened that we were going to get rid of that apartment and the lease was not up, and Bill Woods went down there and said that Major Comstock had been killed, and that didn't make any difference whether she wanted to sue or not, that Major was dead, and they wanted to get out of the lease, so she let him out of the lease, and we got another one somewhere.
Do you ever remember those ducks grounding anyone because of didn't think they were fit to fly?
Outside of that young RAF transferee, that's the only one that I can recall. I don't think there was anybody else who was ever grounded. McDonald, who I told you lined everybody up with a 45, he of course was grounded. Mm. And Peters, who burned his hand so badly on the stove, he was grounded. There's only three I can think of.
I have a photograph of a German wing commander standing on Boxted Tower with a shilling. Do you know anything about him?
You sent me that, and I searched
it.
I have no clue as to who he is. The German Fighter Pilots Association apparently doesn't know who he is either. They treated him quite well. They brought out the T-bone steaks and the beer, and they kept him for 3 or 4 days.
Well, you look at that picture.
Before they turned him in.
You look at that picture as a man at ease.
Yes.
So I'm intrigued, but nobody's been able to tell me who he was. Do you know the other people on the roof? Did you ever?
I probably don't at this time. I could probably identify them if you...
I can't remember if you did. It comes back to me now that I sent you that picture. But I was intrigued.
Send me a copy, I'll try it again. But time keeps going on.
Yeah, I was just... Perhaps you did identify the other guys.
I did identify some of them.
Yeah, I've forgotten that.
One of the people who was not on the roof was our weather officer, who hung out in the tower quite a bit. Have you written to the intelligence people?
I had a tape from Robbie.
Yeah.
And Robbie is, if he's still around, an old gentleman.
No, he's dead.
Well, I had a tape, and he got it all muddled up.
Yeah.
I didn't go back to him. He sent me a tape. When I did the thing on Hutt, I wanted to get more views, and he did a tape, but it was, which surprised me, but probably it was just old age.
Old age.
Ronnie Cohen.
Let's see, number 8, number 6, number 6. God, his name was Lawrence Albright. I'd have never guessed it. He was a staff sergeant.
I see. What position?
He was the chief intelligence NCO for the 63rd Squadron.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, I'm with you now.
Yeah. And Al Davis and Kid Kelleher were the two officers in there, Dave Kelleher, is dead now, but I run across Dave when I went over to take over John England's squadron.
Mm-hmm.
And this has nothing to do with World War II, but World War II, that a commander makes the difference. Absolutely.
If you can't do it with bad material.
You can make good material out of bad material. There have been pilots that I have thrown out of squadrons. Would you believe at one time I had the only second lieutenant in the whole United States Air Force who did not get promoted to first lieutenant? That's an automatic thing. A commander has to take great pains and write many, many letters to keep a second lieutenant from being promoted to first lieutenant. And I wrote them all.
Well, this was in post-war years.
Yes, yes. This was down in Alexandria, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. I was flying at 86s.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a bad lieutenant. Married to an Arab girl. Just wasn't worth the powder blowing to hell.
Mm.
And I went to my group commander, Falcon O'Keefe, Tim O'Keefe. And I said, sir, this guy is not worth it. So he should be thrown out. Oh, well, no. They just got promoted to first lieutenant.
Okay.
I got in October of 41,
mm-hmm.
and I was one of the youngest people
mm-hmm.
In the squadron. And
but you could fly before you went into the Air Force.
You say I flew before that? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. You know, I started flying in 1935.
I wonder how many people had been flying before they went in the Air Force, of that crowd, the Bob Johnsons and the Jerry Johnsons and the Gabbies and all that.
Not many.
Mm.
Not many. I don't believe so. Flying in those days, one, was expensive, and two, there weren't that many airplanes around. I have a pilot's license of 84654.
Mm-hmm.
For the whole United States, there are only 84,000 pilots.
Mm.
And now it's up.
Yeah. Early days. Yeah. McClure was a regular exploiter.
Yes. We got one other one, and I believe it was George Bostwick, who was also a West Pointer.
Okay.
So.
Yes, Bostwick. What do you know about Bostwick? Was he took over the squadron, didn't he, after you?
Yes, he did. After Paul left. George, John Keeler and I put together a reunion of the 63rd at Randolph Field.
Mm.
And quite a number of the people came. This was 1971. And George Bostwick and Paul Conger, opposite ends of the head table. And I was never so embarrassed. The two were carrying on some kind of a fight that they had back in World War II, and they were shouting at each other.
Really?
They were both drunker than scum. You know, Paul had an alcohol problem, and so did George. The last time I saw George was at Montgomery, Alabama, and Barbara and I were driving out, and we stopped in front of the main entrance to the building or the hotel, and George, this was about 8 o'clock in the morning, and George staggers down the steps, and he opens the door, and he gets in, and he says, I want to go to the airport. I said, George, I am not a goddamn taxi. I said, get out. And he didn't hear me, apparently. And he said, take me to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came out and who knew him, and it was one of our people, got George out of the car. And I say, 8 o'clock in the morning to be that
that
day. That's sad, isn't it?
And they got him out and closed the door, and I don't know why I stopped there. It was to see somebody. But in any event, whoever it was, I drove on, and that's the last time I saw George. But he was a West Pointer, as I recall.
Really? He's dead now.
Huh?
Dead, isn't he?
Yes, he's dead.
Yeah.
He worked for General Dynamics.
Did he?
In Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when he was shot down, he had some girl, and she was actually living in the goddamn barracks with us. Not with me, but, you know, with the troops.
What, in Mike Quirk's barracks?
In Mike Quirk's barracks, yeah. And the barracks had little rooms at the end.
Mm-hmm.
This was built for the infantry, you know, where the sergeant had a room at the end, and the troops had cut, and Mike had this end room. And I never forget, when he went over the side, before he went, he said, "And you guys leave my girl alone." And with that, bailed out.
But she was only a wartime girl, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Mike Jackson.
Mike Jackson managed everything he touches, he screws it up.
Really?
He really does. Well, he's part of this picture problem. He put this picture business together, the Happy Warrior that says it's flying it, that Paul Conger was made the CO of the 63rd after D-Day, after what a wonderful job he did on D-Day. Actually, Paul was back in the States, and he didn't make Squadron Command until January of 1945. But Mike Jackson put most of that together.
Mm-hmm.
And
he is
a retired brigadier out of the Air National Guard. Everybody who retires from the Guard becomes a general.
That's nice.
They have just put Michael into the Hall of Fame of New Jersey.
Felix Williamson.
Felix was killed in a P-80 at March Field. I saw the picture of it. Felix just scattered that airplane from one end to the other. He tried to do an acrobatic maneuver. I used to know what it was, but it had to do with a loop.
Mm.
And he didn't quite happen up. And he left P-80 the length of the runway.
And James Stewart, did you know him during the war?
Yes, he lives up in Sacramento. And Jim was divorced. He came to a reunion once, and geez, he looked just terrible. I mean, he needed a shave, he needed a haircut, his clothes were sloppy, but he worked for the state of California Board of Equalization, whoever does the taxes on the land. And he is retired.
Billy Edens.
Billy, I saw Billy in Thailand. No, I saw him in Vietnam. He's retired, and I have his address if you need it.
No, just out of interest.
Yeah,
Rankin.
Robert
Rankin?
Rankin is Tubby's running mate. He's alive.
Is he?
two little guys.
They probably saved Squadron.
Yes, they were.
Joe Bennett.
Joe Bennett got killed.
Walter Flagg.
Walt Flagg lives down in Florida.
Stan Morrell.
Satellite Beach, I think.
Mm-hmm. Stan Morrell.
And Fats Morrell was killed.
On that B-24 that crashed when he tried to rescue people? Was that him?
I don't know, but he was killed during the war.
John Truelock, we dealt with him. Johnny Vought. Donald Henley. Donald Henley,
you just saw him.
Garrick, G-E-R...
Steve Garrick.
I've heard some...
Yeah, I don't know where Steve Garrick is.
I asked somebody about him. They hadn't got a good word for him.
I don't know him, really.
Well, I asked another pilot about him, and they were...